listen closely, you may notice that Mishki takes great license with some of the details surrounding the news of the day. Listen at your own amusement. Thank you.
From the border country of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's Mishki.
Hey, Speed, where do you keep finding this headset? This is the bad one. Again, cuts in and out, can't hear a word you're saying.
I thought that was the same one I grabbed yesterday. Lord. I checked.
Hello. I need a better headset.
I'll grab you another one.
You talking to me, people? I don't know. This is what it sounds like to me. If Speed's talking to me, it sounds like this. Can we throw this one away? Because this one keeps reappearing. Really? This is great. What is this? This is a sound design. Yeah, that's a good brand. Hi, everybody. Anybody have a smoke or something? I could use a smoke. Pat Robertson scaring the hell out of me today. In another notable pronouncement, Big Pat says God told him storms, possibly a tsunami, going to hit the coast of the U.S. this year. It's going to be a rough year in the States, and it's probably because of gays again. They're always causing our weather problems. Robertson has made the prediction four times in the past 2 weeks on his 700 Club broadcast. He said the revelations about this year's bad weather came to him during an annual personal prayer retreat. That's usually where he goes out and rendezvous with God, and I think they have a smoke. Here's Pat's quote. If I heard the Lord correctly, the coasts of America will be lashed. He doesn't mean lashed together. Robertson added, there may well be a tsunami in the Pacific Northwest as well. This again, another in a series of Pat Robertson pronouncements. God has told him storms and possibly a tsunami hitting the coast this year. God also talked to him, Pat said, last week, and said, Pat, you're doing a bang-up job. Keep it up. God also added, next time I'm in town, I'll swing by, take you out. We'll do the town. Robertson said God's been talking to him so much of late that he actually occasionally has to tell the old man to put a lid on it. Robertson said, quote, at least one time I actually had to shout, hey, big guy, how about zipping the old pie hole? I'm on the phone. Robertson says this year has been the worst year yet for God's endless banter. He says he's not getting much done at all. It's just 24 hours of cacophony, just of folderol and claptrap and flapperdoodle. I don't know if that's his word or God's. Earlier today, God told Pat, find another place to get your hair done, cowboy. You look like a vacuum cleaner salesman. Then yesterday it was, Pat, lose the accent. Robertson says it was cool hearing God talk to him the first couple of years, but now he just feels henpecked. Roscoe,
Mishki,
before you say another thing, Roscoe, listen. Before you say one more thing.
Roddy McDowell.
Roscoe, you're never going to be on the show again
Roddy
if you don't
McDowell.
Listen. You're gone. You're permanently banned. He's never allowed on again. He couldn't wait for me to say something first, and consequently, Roscoe will never make an appearance on this show again. And that's unfortunate, because I did enjoy your calls, but you have to realize who the proprietor is. God talks to me, too. He doesn't want you on that much. I was going to tell you about that. A fella in New Zealand whose leg was amputated because of diabetes is trying to sell it. He has it in the freezer. It's in pretty good shape. Wants to raise some money for his daughter. His name is Shane Torrance. He's 42. He kept his tattooed leg in the freezer for 15 months before deciding to sell it. But his plan has been foiled by the online auction website Trade Me, which says, it said it was distasteful. They tasted it? Shane Torrance put a reserve price of $3,000 on his leg, but received no bids. Although it was viewed, the leg was viewed by 20 people, and they were just giddy as hell that you could see it for free. He said he was not sure why he had kept the leg. He says, maybe it's because I'd had it for 42 years. I don't know. I understand that, I guess. I mean, you don't instantly chuck an item like that day one. I don't think you can get your brain around that concept. Leg comes off, Doc says, what do you want to do with it? I don't think your first thought is, chuck it. You got to make that decision that day. You got to make the call that day. Well, hang on a second. I'll take it for now. I don't know what I want to do with it. Maybe I'll use it. Sometimes people take things like this, and they plant a tree in the backyard, and they use it, you know, whatever aid a buried leg can give a tree. There's something there. I know a lot of women save their placenta and bury it in the backyard and plant a tree. And the placenta feeds that tree to the degree you're getting 6, 7, 8 feet of growth a year for a while. I don't know if that was this guy's plan or what, but he put it in the freezer for 15 months. All of a sudden he wanted to raise some money for his daughter. He put it up for auction. I like to put things in my garage, and then after a year or so, if I still haven't found a use for them or found any need to keep them, then I set the things out by the curb. But I don't put them out there right away because I'm not sure whether or not there might be a use somewhere down the line. So I understand what he's doing. This guy went with a freezer. Same thing, really. Selling it's worth a go. I don't think that's insane either, just to see. That doesn't work. You put a free sign on it, and you put it out on the boulevard there. Someone's going to take the leg. Someone's going to take the legs. They always take everything. You put it out on the boulevard, you put a free sign, someone takes it. If it is by chance still there a couple months later, and I don't know how long you'd put up with it sitting out there, but if it is still there a couple months later, you bring it back in the house. Throw it in the junk drawer. You'll find some use for it. You'll find some use for it. It just isn't going to come right away. Maybe it'll one day hold up one end of your butcher block cutting board. I don't know, but it'll make its need known, its use known. It lasted for 42 years. Must be a solid leg. I have another doctor story here. Only this doctor is not healing. He's, wait, what do you mean another doctor story? Tom, did you have a doctor story? No. I don't know why I said that. A doctor who campaigned to rid a town of gulls was convicted yesterday of shooting a bird that had deposited an unwelcome addition into his wife's salad. Ryan Bolton, founder of an anti-seagull action committee. Wait a minute here. Did I read that correctly? Ryan Bolton, founder of an anti-seagull action committee. Anti-seagull action committee. Who's joining the Anti-Seagull Action Committee? Is that where we should be directing our resources? On the list of pests, are seagulls really that high? On the list of pests, what do you have? What do you have on your list of pests? Maybe you don't list them, but what would it stack up like? On the top of your list, you have what? Terrorists, probably, huh? Bottom of your list, crabgrass. Okay, what's in between there? Where do seagulls fit in? They're down by Crabgrass, aren't they? I mean, they're not... Anti-Seagull Action Committee. I'd feel as though I'd wasted my life if I spent it on an Anti-Seagull Action Committee. If that's what I devoted my life to, and my life came to an end, and there I was on my deathbed, I'd pray for reincarnation. I'd beg God to reincarnate me so I could do the whole thing over again and get it right this time. Anti-Sex Offender Committee. There we go. That's what I meant to be on. Yeah, the Anti-Sex Offender Committee. Now I'm getting it right. Whew! Thank you, God, for second chances. Boy, if they were right in the West and it was just a one-life deal, would I have been screwed? Turns out the folks in the East had it. Reincarnation is legit. And now I get to be on the Anti-Sex Offender Committee. This fella, Doc Boughton, said the birds, which were nested on the roof of his home, were aggressive, and he didn't like it. One had dive-bombed his wife as she ate her lunch, covering her food with droppings. The court was told that he had shot the bird with an air gun before stringing it up in his garden as a deterrent to other gulls. Wow, wonder if this guy wants to buy a leg. He strung up the seagull after he killed it as a deterrent to other gulls. Boy, I don't think gulls think that way, Doc. You've been watching too many Disney animated films or something. That's personification you're seeing there. Animals appearing to have human thoughts and human desires and reactions. That's not real. The gulls will not see this strung-up creature and then have a conference to decipher its meaning. You got to get out of the theaters and read biology books. A 62-year-old fellow says that he had tried humane methods to get rid of his seagulls, because other guys on the Anti-Seagull Action Committee said try some humane methods. But the final straw came when one flew past an open window, splattering his hair, clothes, and the lunch of his wife. Wow! Might have been a diarrhea deal. I don't know if that... They're not supposed to have enough to splatter quite that size and area. Boughton says, at my house, it's like living in medieval squalor. Well, what the heck gives there? I think the risk to my family is extreme. I felt justified in taking this bird out. He was convicted of shooting the bird. I don't know if they do anything additional when you string it up like that. Folks, my name's Mishki. What you're listening to here is, I'm just filling in for the day. Jason Lewis, who normally has this post, is out ill, and I'm just covering. Take you till 7:30, and then we'll hand you off to Dave Thompson, who's doing a little fill-in work for Bruce Williams. Remember Bruce? Bruce Williams? Hey, Tiger. You're a dunce, you're a knucklehead, you're an idiot. You're a fool. I was like you when I was your age, but I wised up. You're going to wise up, too. Been around the block once or twice. Have a scar or two to show for it. Been in a scrape myself. I know a thing or two about money. You're going to listen to me, or you're going to get your ass kicked. Where's Bruce Williams now? Put Bruce Williams into a search engine. Tell me where a guy can hear him. You didn't save your receipt, kiddo? Tiger, what are you? You're a fool. If you were here right now, I'd put you through sheetrock. Didn't save your receipt. He used to be in the evening here. I enjoyed his show. We used to have Larry King years ago. I used to tune in Larry at midnight. Some sexy woman would call with a nice voice, and Larry would talk to her about nothing for about 7 minutes, and when she hung up, there'd be a long pause, and then Larry would say, "I've got a good job." Hello.
Bruce Williams is on XM Radio.
Smoking good. He finally figured it out. I used to say to him, Bruce, people ought to be paying big money for your advice. You're a knucklehead, you're a dunce, you're stupid. When I was your age, I made the same kind of mistake. But get into satellite radio where the big money is. He figured it out. Do you get satellite radio?
I sure do.
Do you enjoy Bruce's show?
You're right. Everything's knucklehead. Everything's...
Yeah, you're an idiot, Tiger.
Yeah, exactly.
I was your age. I made the same mistake. I got the crap beat out of me. Got cold cocked by 7 guys. I wised up. Now I'm a millionaire. You're going to be too if you follow my advice. You hear me, Tiger? Hate to see me at your door later tonight kicking your ass, but I will, because someone's got to straighten you out. Do you have a daddy? Did you ever have a daddy? Can you imagine Bruce Williams as your father? God, I thought I needed a shrink now. Imagine what I'd need then. Thank you, sir. That's where Brucey is. That's not my array. That's Joe's. Normally that button would be a drum sounder. No, that's all right, Speed. That's all right. We don't need the drums. Thanks, though. I'll just tell you what. We'll just go to commercial the old-fashioned way. When I was growing up, what they just did is they went right from the talk host saying something to the commercial. I always thought that was a little abrupt. But we're going to do it that way just to sort of tip our hat to the folks who came before us, all the great radio guys who did it that way and paved the way for all of us in this business. So instead, we'll go straight to commercial and skip the little drum deal. All right. He also mentioned in there where Jimmy Hoffa's buried. Play that backwards. What was that tripe? Kenny's by the roadside watching people drive by. Let him be your guide. He'll help you get by. Look out, kid. He's standing by his roadside, Olson, and he has your traffic.
Thanks, Tom.
Shirley.
Brought to us by Mystic Lake Casino, the southbounders on 169, dealing with only a 15-minute wait right now to push their way through the 494 stoplights. It had been as high as 45 minutes to get through there. North 169 from Highway 62 up to Plymouth Avenue, that's 20 minutes. Over on North 100 between Benton and 7, you have 18 minutes. On the midway, West 94, it jams at Snelling, runs 18 over to the Lowry Hill Tunnel. And then the outbounders on West 94, they have a 20-minute drive from the Fish Lake split up to 101 in Rogers. East 94 from 394 in Minneapolis over to Highway 61 in St. Paul. That's 26 minutes. Mystic Lake, congratulations. 4558 at KSTP.
Who sponsored your traffic at 530?
Was it AM1500.com half price dining deals?
Yeah, I heard that driving in and I thought to myself, how does that work exactly? Some guy from upstairs comes down with some money and says, hey, can we get in there? I mean, AM 1500 can't sponsor it. The whole station is AM 1500. So where was the money exchange there? I don't get it.
Neither do I. And
I think that's a scam.
I appreciate you bringing it up.
I mean, I think for the listener, that sort of thing is embarrassing to hear. What it screams is they weren't able to sell this, and now they're claiming to have purchased it themselves.
You're very perceptive, and I agree 100%.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. By the way, as long as we're doing this real-time business, I thought what we might start throwing in terms of how many minutes we are away from things, I thought we might throw in Doomsday Clock stuff periodically. Do you know where the Doomsday Clock is, man?
Is that in Denver?
No, but I mean, do you know where the hand is, the big hand on it?
Oh, no, I do not.
I'd like to find out. Go online, Speed, and just ask the question, where is the Doomsday Clock at right now? And we can give out that every now and then. They did it in the 60s, and people dug it. Helped them know when to duck and cover and that sort of thing. KSTP, good old St. Paul, big time Minneapolis. Back after the news, stick around.
By now it's 64 at the talk station as we get back to more Mishki.
We do not want the convention. The last time there was a convention when the nation was mired in an unpopular war, it got ugly. Now,
broadcasting from the main drag of your Twin Cities, it's Mishki.
Can you say Chicago 1968? It's gonna be a long, hot summer. Talk. is the number here, 651-646-8255, or long distance. That's the same, actually. Last night on the show, I talked about a gentleman who called the police to say someone had taken a roller coaster from his amusement park. And we spent a little time on the show talking about the absurdity of that theft, harking back to the story from years ago in Bosnia where a bridge was stolen. I think I said last night, usually a few weeks pass, maybe a few months before you get another good theft story like that, but 24 hours in this case. Thief steals homeowner's entire front yard. What's going on out there? Guy's entire front yard stolen. Grass, bushes, sprinklers, all hauled away by a thief. Homeowner telephoned San Bernardino County deputies to report that the yard in front of his house was gone. Witnesses told the homeowner they saw the thief taking his front yard. All the sod he had laid, the plants, the irrigation system, took it all. Stole a man's front yard. I don't lock mine up at night. Do you? It's a nice thing about living in St. Paul. We're up in the ante, though. We're up in the ante in ways I'm simply incapable of keeping up with. I don't know what I'm going to read tomorrow. I'm flummoxed by this one. I don't know what I'm going to encounter next. I have a friend in Delano who's worried that someone's going to take his basement some night while he's sleeping. The whole basement. I told him, you're going to wake up. You're going to hear that. Someday someone's going to take the Pacific Ocean. And we're not even going to flinch. We're not even going to take a second look. It's going to be, oh, there goes another one. Boy, those thieves are at it again. Best turn the boathouse back into a garage, I guess. Ocean's gone. Someone took it. I think it's that fellow over there.
Why do you say him, Dave?
I don't know. Look how damp he is. Very damp. Bridges, roller coasters, front yards. I mentioned last night that I used to be a thief, and I took small things, usually from Snyder's. I was a boy. Playing cards, keychains, things like that. It was always easier because you just stick them in your pocket. I've been done. Hearing about this smash and grab business three times today. Top of the hour news, I heard smash and grab stories. I don't like the name of that crime. I guess people are stealing cars. Johnny Height was talking about it, driving the cars into businesses and then grabbing smokes mostly. It's a smash and grab deal. Where's the finesse? Where's the finesse in a smash and grab? Think anybody's going to get a series, a TV series? If they're smashing grabbers, what was the big TV series when I was a kid having to do with a thief? It Takes a Thief. Remember that show? Who was the guy? Suave, sophisticated fella. I think he was starring alongside Jill St. John, is that right? Robert Wagner, I think. Yeah, It Takes a Thief. That guy had finesse. Smash and grab. You're not getting a series. I don't like smash and grab. I don't know what happens when you take the lawn or take the bridge. Take a roller coaster. You're not smashing and grabbing. It's not finesse either. It's bold. It's brash. It's brazen. I like it for that, but what can you like about smash and grab? Where's the thought? Where's the sophistication? Where's the plans? Where's the schematics? Where's the meeting weeks ahead of time? Where's the scoping out the situation? Where's the checking security systems? Where's the keeping track of the guard schedule? I mean, come on. There's a way to steal and there's a way not to steal. You can't have any pride in a smash and grab. Hello.
Hello, Tommy.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to see if you had heard of the guy that was stealing gas while he was pressure washing the lots they were in.
He was siphoning out gas while he was pressure washing the vehicle?
He was pressure washing the lots at night, making it look like he was a contractor.
Oh, and he was taking the gas. That takes some planning.
And he was selling it to his neighborhood. Somebody copped him out, though.
In the world of crime, if you're working in that world and you're running a little newspaper, you might do a nice story on him. And a kudo here, a kudo there. Thank you. I did not know about that. Yeah, hello?
Yeah, hey, I had to look up It Takes a Thief,
mm-hmm.
and it was Robert Wagner, but also, you know, Fred Astaire was on that show?
That was Robert Wagner's father.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
I forgot about that. And interestingly, didn't he play sort of a sophisticated thief in The Towering Inferno?
I think that's right.
Fred Astaire. Fred Astaire would never have participated in a smash and grab.
No.
You can't see it.
Unless you can dance and grab.
Well, if you're dancing, you're not smashing.
That's true. Okay.
Thanks. Although, what if you're dancing in a mosh pit? Would Fred Astaire be in a mosh pit, and what would that look like? And wouldn't that be an interesting thing to see? Chris.
Tommy, what's your take on those four churches that were broken into and nothing was taken? I mean, you do it once, you find out there's nothing good in there. Why are you going to go back and repeat it?
You're assuming they're breaking in to steal. I think they're breaking in to pray. I'm serious. I remember being stunned the first time I encountered a church that was locked. When I was growing up, the churches were all open, and you went in anytime you wanted, and you knelt down, and you said a prayer, and you looked around, you saw five or six other guys, and maybe they had just gotten news that they had a terminal illness, or that maybe they just heard that their kid was being sent overseas to some war, and you'd see them scattered about, and the church was always open.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw one locked, I thought, what's going on? And I heard the story someone had stolen a chalice or something, and they have to keep it locked now. I can see people who believe prayers are best answered when they're delivered in a church, having to get in there and breaking in and not intending to steal anything. That's my guess. That's what I'm going with. Bob.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hi. I have what I consider a clever thief story.
I like clever thieves. I mean, if we're going to have crime, first of all, what I like about it is doesn't sound like a lot of people are getting hurt. It's nonviolent. Obviously, in a perfect world, we wouldn't have crime, but we're going to have crime. So let's figure out what crime we want. All right, I'm into this.
Okay.
Stealing with finesse. What do you have?
This gentleman had his battery stolen out of his car. He came home and found his battery missing, and there was a note that said that I was in dire straits. I needed a battery. I'm sorry I took your battery, and then I'll pay you back. So a couple days later, the gentleman came home and found that his battery was back in his car again, and there was another note that said, you know, I apologize for what happened, but I wanted to thank you, and he left him two Twins tickets. And so, in thanks, he went to the Twins game, and while he was gone, the thief robbed his house.
You know, you got to tip your hat to him. Yeah. See, that guy's getting a TV series. Thank you. That guy gets his own series. Starring, I don't know, it's not going to be a big-time actor. Maybe, what do you think, Amy?
Oh, I don't know.
How about the guy who played Corporal Boyle on Gomer Pyle? He's not doing anything these days, is he? I think he would be the guy. What's on your mind?
Well, I remember a few years back when the shopping center in West St. Paul was enclosed, and it was rather large, really, for a small suburb like that. Anyway, they got to work one day, and it was August, and they couldn't figure out why it was so hot in the mall. And they discovered that overnight someone had stolen the 1.5-ton air conditioning unit off the roof.
See, I just don't have the energy for that kind of...
I mean, they would have had to rent a crane. I mean, this is a major operation.
To me, it's easier to walk down the street and stop into a joint and apply for a job. It's just easier. I don't have the energy for that. I get tired hearing about it.
See, what it speaks to is if a thief acts as if he has every bit of right to do what he's doing and that he is acting with a full authority to do something, mm-hmm. no one asks questions.
Mm-hmm. That's the power of positive thinking. I think you read, whose book was that? Not Norman Vincent Peale. Who?
No, you just walk in like you act like you know what you're doing, and everybody assumes that someone from the head office sent you to do this.
Right. But I think what's happening is these people are getting a hold of these self-help books that came out in the 70s that were intended to help people in business and are, well, it's backfiring. It's helping more of our criminals who in the past wouldn't have had the guts, the chutzpah for some of this stuff, but now feel, you know, I'm going to release the giant within the way Anthony Hopkins or, no, not Anthony Hopkins, what the hell was that? Anthony Robbins, the way he told me to. I'm going to release my little giant. Walked on coals last week, stealing them this week. I think it's, you do a little research on who buys the self-help books. 5 will get you 10, it's riffraff getting most of them. That's my guess. Thank you, Amy. Sorry I cut you off there. My apologies. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Mishki here.
What she was just talking about, how a thief can walk in and act like they know what they're doing, is exactly how a couple of thieves walked off with an ATM machine from a well-known health club here in the cities.
It's odd, too, because I don't associate... Oh, wait a minute. An ATM machine?
Yeah.
They walked off with a machine from the health club. Were they in uniforms?
That I'm not sure about, but nobody at the front desk asked them any questions.
Well, it's getting easier. Too easy. Thank you. Too easy. Hello, Johnny.
Yeah, well, L. Ron Hubbard, I think, is the book you're looking for.
What? No, that was Dianetics.
Yeah. Isn't that the one?
No, there was a book called The Power of Positive Thinking.
Oh.
It wasn't the guy who, it sounds like it would be a Reverend Robert Schuller book, but it wasn't.
Yeah,
Bob.
Okay, well, that's about the same.
Mm-hmm. But did you read Dianetics?
Yes, I did. Oh, holy crepes. It'll bend your mind. It'll bend a couple of things with you.
It bent Tom Cruise's mind, but what did you think? Did you jump on board? Did you hitch your star to that wagon?
No. Hmm. No, I hitched my star to the old-fashioned way that I was taught.
Oh. But you were exploring. You were exploring, huh?
Exploring?
Exploring. What would a Catholic boy be doing reading Dianetics? What were you doing?
I got it for 50 cents at a garage sale, so what the heck?
Well, I run into Ray Conniff albums at garage sales that are 50 cents, and I don't buy them.
Well, I also got, what was it, Don McLean by
American
Pie.
It was Norman Vincent Peale. Well, then, who wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People? Oh, that was Dale Carnegie. See, I was thinking Dale Carnegie wrote... No, wait a minute. I said The Power of Positive Thinking, right? That's Norman Vincent Peale. And who wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People? Was that also Norman Vincent Peale? The Speed is doing some work on the other side of the thermal pane glass right now.
See, I don't know this.
And then Dale Carnegie, I think, wrote something. And then all of a sudden,
You're teaching us.
Dale Carnegie wrote what? How to Win Friends and Influence People? I see that at every garage sale. Ray or Roy Conniff albums, Dale Carnegie, and Vegas Ashtray. At every garage sale I go to. And I buy them. Of course, you got to buy them. They're a dime.
How many Willie Nelson cassettes do you find?
Now, hold on there. Don't say that about Willie. He's not there. Willie is not there that you know of. Hello!
Hey, Mitch.
Yeah?
Have you ever heard that story about the 4-foot-tall Pillsbury Doughboy that got stolen from that town in New Hampshire?
Was it a ransom situation?
Yeah.
And did they pay?
No, I don't think they did.
I would have. I had a little doll. Well, I don't want to tell this story. Oh, no, I won't. Hello?
Yeah, it was Dale Carnegie. Also, Corporal Boyle was played by Richard Sinatra.
The fact that you know that worries me. You don't have a poster of Corporal Boyle above your bed, do you? Why do you know so much about Corporal Boyle, and how did he like having to play a guy with that name? Was there a Captain Carbuncle in the show? Corporal Boyle. This Sinatra fella, any relation?
Nope, doesn't say so.
Mm. Dale Carnegie wrote what?
How to Win Friends and Influence People. Mm. Yep.
You know what's funny about that title? You just have a feeling, without even knowing anything about the book, that... The friendships aren't going to be very deep friendships.
If you have to read a book to even get that stuff,
and because it's associated with influencing people, and it's winning a friend, not earning a friendship. It's just a feeling there you're going to be using somebody. Someone's getting used.
Yep.
But in a positive way. All right, thank you. Mishki, in the nighttime, on AM 1500 KSTP. He's my tootsie wootsie in the good old... They said, oh, I see where you're going, Mishki. We thought you were drinking again. Put him down. That's not a bad idea. R.F. Moeller, jeweler, 50th in France, and to Dinah Ford in Cleveland and St. Paul, and next to Neiman Marcus in downtown Minneapolis.
AM 1500 KSTP. Jesus had some water, said wine would be better yet. Elvis picked up a guitar and made all the women wet. He died young. Jesus, he died younger. Elvis died from a too much. Jesus died of hunger. Jesus sang down through the ages. Do like you'd have him do to you. Elvis rocked the universe with a bebop. Now here they are on black velvet in a parking lot in Missouri, rocking my soul with the rock and roll soulful harmony.
AM 1500 KSTP. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Mish. How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks.
You know, when I was younger, and I about very early 20s, 21, 22, I kind of went on a quest, you know?
Uh-huh.
The only thing, and my battery's dying in case I lose you.
Okay.
But Napoleon Hill was the stuff I found. A book called Think and Grow Rich. And he actually interviewed James J. Hill, the railroad guy. He was one of the, like, 50 people that were interviewed, you know. And they basically 13 things that all rich people like that are like-minded in. And then the follow-up book was Positive Mental Attitude, PMA.
I know someone who gets PMA. The thing that used to happen when people would interview these successful folks, the common denominator that they used to run into time and time again, and it's a fascinating one, none of them ever saw a setback as a negative.
Exactly. They wanted to know what was going to happen. What was the end outcome of this? What was I going to gain from this?
Every setback had, in their mind, a positive that was greater than the downside, so that they constantly, no matter what was happening to them in life,
they were winning and constantly
advancing. And they'd even argue it rationally and show you how what looked like a complete disaster, look, it wasn't. See, so they simply did not allow themselves. You didn't hang up. No. What happened is your battery went dead, right? Just for my own sake, I'm going to need to know that. Because it's so disconcerting when you're in the middle of a discussion and click. But I understand batteries. I had one once. It went with a Cub Scout flashlight. When I was a boy, I had a birthday party. When a fella down the block, a friend of mine, showed up with a big box. He and his mother carried it down the sidewalk. And I was just amazed and in heaven and couldn't wait to open it. It's a large box, probably the kind of box you would see maybe if a television, a big television, were delivered to your home, and by a big television, I mean those big console televisions. I still have one of those. Do you? I think they're pretty with the woodwork. I guess everybody else says they're passe. Anyway, he had a big old box coming down the sidewalk, and his mother and him carrying it, and my mom opened the door. What do you have for Tommy? He came in, and they were sweating, and they set it down, and of course, that was the first present I wanted to open. I had other friends over, and they had little gifts, relatively speaking, little gifts. But Mom said, why don't you save that one for last? So I opened all the other ones first, and I tried to pretend I liked the little things I was getting, but I didn't like it because I knew that what this birthday was going to be about was the big box. Well, I opened the big box, and it was padded with a lot of newspaper and some cushiony things. And, well, it didn't take me long to figure out that the padding and the paper and the cushiony things were really all there was to the box. There was nothing in the box. The box was a joke. And instead, he handed me a Cub Scout flashlight and comb. Now, a good joke, good gag, funny. But his dad was our scout troop leader. And in the basement, his dad had hundreds of Cub Scout flashlights and combs that he had gotten from the Cub Scout organization. So, good gag, but he didn't get me anything. In the end, he didn't even buy me anything. They did this gag, and then his mother probably said, just give him this. Dad's got 1,000 of them. That kid was never invited to another party. Nice guy. Very successful today in the aerospace program down in Texas. But I guess the letdown of nothing being in the box and the fact that the cheapskate just gave me a Cub Scout flashlight. But I had to get a battery for that. I remember thinking, I bet you at least put a battery in. No, you got to get a battery for that. So I got it on the next day. I actually got it turned on the next day. I don't think I've purchased an item since with a battery. Oh, look at the time. Rock solid, rock bottom. Bottom of the hour news time with Wildcat Fox.
Since I'm a girl, I need to ask, does a Cub Scout flashlight vary from other flashlights?
Oh, yeah. It's got the Cub Scout logo on it.
And that's it.
Yeah, and it's not as big. It's a small flashlight. It's
kind of like a mini mag.
Yeah, it's not much bigger than the comb. Why that combination? I don't know. It was a Cub Scout comb and a Cub Scout flashlight, and they gave them away together all the time.
Yeah, I suppose you could always look your best when you're trying to find your way out of the woods.
You know, my boys, when they leave the house, if I did not have a wife, would never have combed hair. There is an age at which I notice people not combing their hair, and it's older. It's generally when they're older. I never think about it with kids. With kids, I just expect their hair to be going every which way. So I never think about it, and sometimes my wife looks at me as I'm allowing a kid to go out the door as though, why? How could you allow him to go out that way?
Like you're sending him outside without any clothes on.
Right. But I don't know. I don't notice kids with nice hair. I just assume that all kids have hair like the kid in The Little Prince. Remember the book, The Little Prince? I think all kids look like that. You don't know that kid?
I don't know that book.
Oh. You don't know the book, The Little Prince?
No.
Well, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas. Wait, there's a holiday between now and then, isn't there? Oh, no, that's the holiday where I give her the big empty box. Well, I got to get you The Little Prince. Yeah, that's a classic.
All right.
You probably would find it on the shelves at home. Surely your mother stumbled upon it growing up and read it to one of the children.
No,
you had 47 kids in your family?
If it was, almost. If it was a book that was in the house that I grew up in, chances are good I would have read it and I would have remembered reading it. Does not ring a bell.
Here's an interesting...
I remember reading In Cold Blood.
As a kid?
I was, I think I was 9 when I read that book.
Get out of here!
Maybe a little older, but not much.
Do you know that doing that can permanently mess with your head at that age? I mean, you really can do some, you can create some horrors the rest of your life if you're not ready to encounter some of that stuff. I know adults who can't handle that book. What were you doing reading it? Why were you reading it?
I would have to, as I recall, my father had read the book and he seemed very intrigued with it, although any book that he read, he really devoured.
Yeah, but you know what was going on in the old man's mind. There's a farmer in a rural setting in central Minnesota, and he has kids, and very, very easy to put himself in the position of the, was it the Clutters or the Clutters?
Clutters, yes, for the Herb Clutter family.
Yeah, so he was
Herb. And
he
even had a daughter named Nancy.
Ouch. So that, see, that's why the old man, and your dad was figuring out what he was going to do to make sure this never happened to you. And did your dad have, are you aware of a plan? Did he ever talk about where the guns were?
Oh, we all knew where the guns were.
Okay.
That was no secret.
Okay.
And the dog was relatively vicious, too. You didn't want to mess with King.
Clutters didn't have a dog and apparently didn't have a gun. Could have used one. Could have used both. Yeah, I bought a place one time in the country. And, of course, country folk think citiots, as they call us,
yes.
Citiots, are very strange because it's only when we get to the country that we get concerned about security. Meanwhile, when we're in Crime Central, we're perfectly fine. And it's true. I got out to the country and I said, okay, now I got to start thinking weaponry here because in cold blood, you know, it's in the middle of nowhere where you're in trouble. They can't mess with you when you have neighbors 6 inches away. So I assumed out in the country was where I wanted to start thinking security. I'd figure this periodically. I'd say, you know, a guy could come in here, start up a chainsaw and go to town on us and no one would come because they wouldn't even hear the chainsaw. That's how far away the nearest neighbor was.
That's a big part of it. If you scream, who's going to hear you?
Yeah.
And, you know, and the nearest neighbor is a quarter of a mile away or more.
But boy, did those people out there laugh at me. They said, no. No, here's where you are safe, you fool. You stupid fool. And I said, that's what they told the Clutters, you moron. And then we got in a big fight and I was cold cocked. Because those guys are strong from lifting big, heavy things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
What started this? I don't know. But
the book, The Little Prince.
Oh, God.
Is that started this?
That's the problem with this show, that a nice, lovely child's book like The Little Prince can lead to someone taking out my family with a chainsaw. Why my mind takes us there and not to, you know, a story about a blue jay? I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's because as a 9-year-old, I was exposed to things I shouldn't have been. I think something happened to me at that age, not reading in cold blood. I think maybe I was introduced to the Addams Family, and it was a little early to see Lurch.
It wasn't the Cub Scout Coleman flashlight, was it?
That didn't help, that.
Now, back to Mishki on AM 1500 KSTP.
Lovely, the first three quarters. I don't know what's happening. Is it raining now, Speed? What do you see out there? Looks dark. Yeah, it was lovely, though. And I was not surprised to learn that today is the happiest day of the year. A lot of people don't know that, but it is the happiest day of the year. May 18th. Mark it down. It's the same every year. Experts have found that people are the most happy on May 18th because it is spring, because the days are sunnier and getting even sunnier, and longer, and there is a holiday approaching, and that holiday is going to mark the start of a wonderful season, and it's just the time when we are feeling our best. The most miserable day of the year is January 3rd, according to experts. That's when millions of people return to work after the Christmas break and don't feel they have much of anything to look forward to. Spring is all about new beginnings. This time of year can give us all a renewed sense of enthusiasm, the experts say. By the way, the experts have names, but I'm not going to give them to you because they get enough calls. When I was growing up, there used to be a song that I'd hear on our record player. It's the happiest time of the year. That song was about Christmas. Crazy thing was, Christmas was only a week or so away from the most miserable time of the year. And we never had that song going. It's the most miserable time of the year. January 3rd, we should have been playing that. They were setting us up only to knock us down. It wasn't pretty. And no one sings songs about the 18th of May, huh? No songs? No official May 18th songs? Because it's the happiest time of the year. What gives? Come on. Why aren't there songs about it? May 18th. No one ever brings up May 18th in conversations, do they? Whereas January 3rd is brought up, at least I have brought it up often. Every year, since I've been in radio, I've brought it up. And I started this show on, no joke, a January 3rd. January 3rd, 1994, this show started. And I always bring it up because I always say on that day, and those of you who've been around a while may know this, when I come back from the New Year's holiday break, I let it be known that we now stare into the great abyss. What I call the long 90. You've heard that, I'm sure. The long 90? The long 90. 90 days until April, January, February, March. Long months. Hard months. Nothing for the average person to look forward to. It's just a long, slow march toward April, toward spring, toward baseball, toward green leaves, life, hope. And I guess it all culminates in May 18th, the happiest day of the year. It's the most wonderful season of all, spring, and it doesn't have a song saying so. They say spring unlocks the flowers to paint the laughing soil. Did you know that? This isn't the experts I'm talking about. I've moved on to the poets. Spring unlocks the flowers to paint the laughing soil. They say it's the year's most charming chapter. Spring hangs her infant blossoms on the tree, rocked in the cradle of western breezes. I know one thing. It's a tough time to check out. They say a lot of good things about spring. They never say anything bad about spring. There are even happy little ditties about spring flooding. I've listened to them. Spring floods destroy our farm. They cause all of us harm. But there is still charm in spring. Who needs a farm anyway? Guess it was just in the way. Guess the flood has saved the day. Ain't spring. Ain't spring. Ain't spring. The best time of the year. I think that's how the song goes, something like that. It's unfortunate that several members of our family died in the spring, cause we don't like... What about that other song?
Goodbye, my friend, it's hard to die.
Oh, yeah, this one.
When all the birds are singing in the sky.
I remember this.
Now that the spring is in the air. Pretty girls are everywhere. Think of me and I'll be there. We had
yeah, that's a lovely song. Actually, it's unfortunate that there aren't any good spring songs. I was trying to think of some good ones, and while there are some great summer songs, spring is screwed. I even thought of the awful kite song we play and how that's sort of a spring song and brings many of our listeners down, which is why I love to play it. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, always, kites are fun. This song says so, and the experts say so. Perhaps, possibly, the worst song ever written, but it was written in the spring. What do you expect? Fun coming up here. This is great. I love this part.
Kites are fun. Kites are fun.
Yeah.
Kites are fun.
See my kite, it's fun. See my kite, it's green and white. Nothing in its distant light.
We're losing some listeners now.
This is a little yellow streak.
Uh-oh. Incoming. Uh-oh. Ouch. Okay. You didn't like it. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Mishki?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, it's Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, my friend Nate is in the hospital today.
Uh-huh.
So I was wondering, could you, like, and I know this is a weird request, between 7:20 and 7:30, just say, Nate, meet, hope you're feeling better. He's got some sort of thing. I don't really, shouldn't really probably go into it, because he'd probably get mad if I mention
Is it an embarrassing problem?
No.
Let me just answer me this. Are they using a rubber band?
Do they what? I'm sorry?
In this treatment, will they be using a rubber band?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So Nate's in the hospital locally?
Yeah, he's at the U of M.
Well, is it an experimental deal?
No. He never elaborates on his health conditions, but something in his lung. It's not too serious, apparently, uh-huh. But they're having to go in through his leg, past his heart, and then into his lung.
Boy.
That isn't the craziest thing.
So between when and when?
Between 7:20 and 7:30.
Oh.
You could just work that in. His name is Nate. His last name is Meat.
How do you spell that?
M-E-A-T-H.
Okay. I got her.
Ah, you're awesome, Mishki.
Okay, I'll take care of it. Nate Meath. Will you write that down? And you're going to have to remind me, Speed, because something happened to my brain in college. John?
Yeah, we're talking, Mishki. Rubber ball, big rubber ball.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a simile that we should definitely eradicate.
Do you remember the movie?
No, I just remember that the morning sun is shining like a big, like a red rubber ball. You know, that guy, if he was thinking he was going to get a girl with that poetry, my hope is at that point the girl pulled a crying game thing on him.
Okay. Well, the other one was that balloon, the red, big red rubber balloon.
I don't believe the rubber was in there.
It
was just the red balloon.
The big red balloon?
No, just the red balloon. I think it's a French film.
Yes. You are exactly
I right. liked that one. The Little Prince is a French book. That's why so many KSTP listeners don't know about this stuff. They have boycotted all French things.
You are culturing.
And they don't want anything to do with French. But every now and then, folks...
Come on!
No, the listeners here, oh, God, they don't... You bring up the French, and you might as well be bringing up Al-Qaeda.
Oh, there goes the switchboard right there.
Hang on a second. What are you saying, Speed? Oh, of course we do. I guess I got a break soon. They're cracking the whip here. Yeah, the red balloon. I forgot about that one. The red balloon, the morning sun shining like a big red rubber ball, like a red rubber ball.
The claymation one?
And then there's Nate's song, Put the Rubber Band Around the Red Thing. Weird, I always think, when Dave starts videotaping me, I always think, well, where is this going to be seen? This isn't going to be one of these Paris Hilton things one day that I have to worry about is. But then what he does is he shows you the video. Because, first of all, you rarely get to see yourself from the side. And you don't get to see how you appear to other people with those eyeglasses on. And then this is also the case. A lot of people go in, try on frames. There are no lenses in there. So they really can't see what they look like. How many times has this happened to you? I've had this happen to me often. You go to an eyeglass store, you buy a pair of frames, because they look good on you as you look into the mirror, but you're blind. Then you pick them up the day they're ready and you put on, I didn't buy these. That, what the? Yes, you did. No, hold on a minute. I look like a dork. Well, see, you should add contacts on when you try it on the frame. Well, if I had contacts, why'd I be buying glasses? Well, that's why we have the special video deal. They all sorts of gizmos out there. Dave took me back into the back room the other day, and I thought, oh, it's a Paris Hilton deal. No, he took me back there, and he wanted to show me this machine. He says, nobody in this region of the country has this machine. And it was some sort of machine where, you know how these people advertise one-hour service? Well, what Dave says is, if you're getting all this special scratch-resistant stuff on your eyeglasses and all this other special stuff, no way is it going to be ready in an hour. Can't be. So they're going to say, oh, I didn't know you wanted all that. Well, then we don't have one-hour service. Dave says, see this machine right here? This guarantees one-hour service. This machine, no matter what's being done to eyeglasses, will allow everything to be done in 1 hour. And I'm the only guy in this whole region of the country who has it. I said, that's amazing. That's going on the air. Dave, I'm going to drive at least another half a person into your store, tops. Spectacle Shop, 1 mile north of 694 on Silver Lake Road, mile and a half from downtown St. Paul on Robert Street.
AM 1500, KSTP.
How would you look in a mohawk? Would that look suit you? Got a story having to do with that after the top of the hour. Also, well, that's it, actually. I'm going to have to make a half hour out of that somehow. Oh, no, there's more. Here we go. Where's that other piece? There it is. Hey, look. Well, that story's not going to make you listen, so I'm not going to read that one. Let's see. How about this one? Nope, that won't keep you around past the top of the hour. There's no reason to listen here. Crap. I can't think of why you'd stick around. KSTP, good old St. Paul, big time Minneapolis. I guess see you later.
TBC,
I guess we're losing you.
I'm Gil Gross. Should English be the national language? The Senate thinks so and passed an amendment to its immigration package to make it so.
It is 63 at the talk station as we get back to more Mishki.
From the inner city tarmac of University Avenue, it's Mishki.
Is in the news. Gave himself a mohawk after he lost a bet. But that's not the story. He gave himself a mohawk after he lost a bet. Gas station attendant. Just a silly little bet with a friend, but he said, if I lose, I'll shave my head into a mohawk. And he lost, and he's a man of his word, and he did it. Well, he was fired. He was fired because the boss said, ouch. Don't want the customer seeing that. Bye-bye. The gas station attendant says, I can't believe I've been fired. I can't. As far as I'm concerned, this cut is the mildest I could have had. To be honest, most people I work with said it really suited me. After the head shave, I was at work for about a week when the boss comes up to me and says, I don't like the hairstyle. I say, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm going to be keeping it for the summer. I have to. I made a bet. He says, if that's the case, you're going to be working for someone else. Give me your keys. That was it. He fired me right then and there. I don't know why this story is in the news, but here's what intrigues me about it. Most of the people I worked with said, that look really suits me. I'd hate to have a mohawk and have people saying, hey, Mish, that look suits you. That's the style that really captures the true you. Hey, Tommy, that seems to fit with the whole package there. Yeah, that's you, man. That is you, Travis. What are they really saying there when they're saying that? I don't think it's a compliment. And then he says the cut was the mildest cut I could have had. A mohawk. I don't think that look goes with mild. I think there's a big statement being made there. I don't think it's mild. I think it's aggressive. It was the mildest cut I could have had. Well, what would have been the most extreme cut, Mr. Gas Station Attendant? I mean, what's the other end of the spectrum if a mohawk is the most mild? I could have had each individual hair strand fitted with a hollow pasta noodle and then have that cooked, because that look is extreme. It's trendy in Soho, but I think it's extreme. This mohawk was darn near something you'd see in Mayberry. It's a Mayberry mohawk. Didn't Opie have a mohawk or something? Or Andy or Aunt B had a mohawk? Somebody did. Floyd had a mohawk. Or he cut the mohawks or who? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking of a different town. Maybe I'm thinking of the bucolic little village of Hell's Acres. Huh? Maybe that's where that look is popular. Hell's Acres. The mayor there has a mohawk, doesn't he? Yeah, the one-eyed mayor. What's his name? Femur Cobb of Hell's Acres. He has a mohawk. It wasn't Andy of Mayberry. After all, it was Femur Cobb. They call him Femur because of what he did to his son-in-law's leg, I think. By the way, Femur says the mohawk is almost a Norman Rockwell-like in Hell's Acres. Everybody has one. It's the equivalent of the crew cut in the 1950s in the U.S. Hell's Acres. You know where that is, folks? Hell's Acres? Bosnia. Little town of Hell's Acres is in Bosnia. Herzegovina. Evolution occurs faster at the equator. Did you know that? Evolution, which is ongoing. A lot of people think evolution was... that it came and it went and it's gone. No. It's slow. I remember as a boy trying to watch the hands of the clock move and thinking, wow, an evolution was slower than this, huh? Dad, come here, look at this. Can you see the hands moving? No, son, we'd need a larger clock. Well, evolution is still happening, but it's happening faster at the equator. That's where evolution occurs fastest. So we're not evolving very fast up here in Minnesota. That's the story. That's why I'm bringing this to the air. I'm letting you know that there's a reason why some of the things happening are happening. We're not evolving very fast up here in Minnesota. Some would argue we're devolving. I've noticed more and more formerly enlightened citizens over the last decade here in Minnesota becoming more ape-like in their thinking. You can see it with some of our elections. Knuckle-draggers are taking over. You see a lot of knuckle-draggers out there now. No more... covers of Time magazine saying the good life in Minnesota. That's over. We're on our way to becoming a Wyoming with lakes. Nice thing is Jane Goodall is making more appearances here in Minnesota. Great to see Jane, although again, circumstances are suspicious. You don't want Jane Goodall coming to your city too often when you don't actually have apes. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah, I called to tell you, if you're interested, that Chris Christopherson back in the mid-70s recorded a song called Hellacious Acres.
Really? Nothing's original anymore. Yeah. No matter what I come up with, someone's done it already.
Well, it's a kind of a rockin' song, but it's really good, actually.
Now, was that back when he still had his voice before it was destroyed?
It's a bit raspy,
yeah.
But he's got that beat and the big brass section and so forth behind him, and it's, mm-hmm.
Hellacious Acres.
Yes, it's off the Stars Born album.
Oh, he was a good-looking man back then. That was before he got prune-like, but he was a sort of a Hollywood leading man type guy then.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that album. You see it now at the Goodwill quite a bit. All right, I'm going to ask Johnny Height, station musicologist, to find it for me. Thank you for that.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Oh, will you give Johnny a call, see if he has Hellacious Acres by Kris Kristofferson? I bet if he does have that album, A Star Is Born, he's covered it up. I bet he has it covered in Mylar. You don't want that out as a man. There's Chris, and I think it's Barbara Streisand, isn't it? There could be a straightforward medical explanation for at least three of the world's major religions. There could be a medical explanation for three of the world's major religions. Moses, Muhammad, and Jesus all experienced revelations on mountains. But according to some experts, they were possibly suffering from a form of altitude sickness. Neurologists are casting doubt on the process these spiritual leaders say they went through in encountering and receiving these revelations, and they are, of course, making the entire existence of God suspect. That's not good news. Moses, Muhammad, Jesus all heard or saw a presence, experienced lights, felt afraid. So say these brain scientists, these neurologists. But contemporary mountaineers, who are more interested in ice picks than anything mystical, have the same experience. The dizzy heights have the same effect on them. Acute and chronic hypoxia significantly affects the temporoparietal junction and the prefrontal cortex, and both areas have also been linked to mystical experiences. So apparently they've written off everything we ever received from Moses, Muhammad, and Jesus. The three great religions of the world are here because some guy's got altitude sickness. These neurologists are sticking by this report. And they will be appearing in various cities soon on a tour with a lot of security, a lot of security. Turns out it was all just a little brain blip due to some thin air. The three great religions of planet Earth have been based on a little peculiar brain thing that happens when you're climbing. It's as though we're being told global trade policies are based on a single child's elbow injury in Nova Scotia. It's a tough one. They're saying there's been a terrible, terrible mistake made here. A terrible mistake. Someone goofed late in the game to be throwing this curveball at us, but there it is. I mean, folks are preparing right now for the end of the world, which I guess is coming up shortly. So say the publications arriving at my door. I mean, that's happening, right? The end of the world deal? That's coming up, ain't it? Don't tell me that was based on a guy misreading his wife's grocery list or something. I mean, this stuff is, it's running deeper than that out there, isn't it? I mean, what are you saying? We're all pretty much on our own? Left to figure it out based on our own reasoning? Assuming said reasoning is done closer to sea level? I don't know what to believe now. I think tonight I'm going to go home and figure it all out on my own. I'm just going to head home, use reason, and reason this whole thing out best I can. Maybe I'll scribble some notes down. Maybe I'll have a smoke, mull over a couple of things. Maybe by morning I'll have the answers. Maybe by morning I'll have a brand new religion. Maybe I'll bring that religion to the air. Maybe I have a name for it already. Maybe I'll call it gut feelingism. What do you think about that? A new religion. Hitting the Twin Cities, 2006. Gut feelingism. The belief that the ultimate answers are to be found in the human gut. Pretty profound, huh? I might come tomorrow night to the old microphone with my own stone tablets. I don't know. We'll see. When I can afford the same taste in beer my boys have. He said, Dad, come on, man. I got a paper route here, and it's just a Pabst Blue Ribbon. I mean, you were really scraping the dregs there. I mean, you'd walk into a liquor store, say, what's the cheapest stuff you have, and you'd buy that. I think they'd throw in a case for free if you got two or something. Anyway, in the 1980s, they built a real brewery in Minnesota, and I mean a real brewery. I don't know what they were claiming the stuff was brewed up until then, but after Prohibition, the beer brewed in Minnesota was swill. Before Prohibition, it wasn't. But they never got back to the good recipes. They never did. I mean, you liked it, and I'll tell you why you liked it, because you got it ice cold. And when you get it ice cold, there's no flavor anymore. That's why people have frosty mugs, because they're used to drinking swill. You frost up your mug, you drag it out of the freezer, you put beer in it, and you say, boy, that's good. No, it's cold. There's very little taste there. You can't have a beer at that temperature and still get flavor. You're having a very cold libation, and that's fine. It's a hot day, it's going down, that's great. But if you like flavor in your beer, then you got to look for another brewery, and I'd look for the one right here in St. Paul on the banks of the Mississippi, Summit. It's been working for me since the 80s. Summit Brewing Company, St. Paul.
Mishki, AM 1500, KSTP.
Looking man, wow, it's something else.
Mishki, AM 1500 KSTP. Hello, Jimmy.
Hey, Tommy. The array for sushi should have somebody telling Joe that he should always go with his gut.
Oh, really? Let's go to Sushi's array and see what we can find. I often enjoy going to his array. Let's see. I don't think Joe likes it. Let's see. Here we go. All right, we'll start with page one. This might take an hour. Boy, there's a lot there. Boy. The hell of a lot there! Boy. A lot there. Okay. Wow! Why does he have this one?
You could almost vomit when you look at this thing.
Well, he's got some unusual things here. Let's see. Boy! Go with your gut, Gamers!
I don't know what it's labeled. I've never asked the rookie.
And now a man who's on more than he's off.
What's that mean? Ah, boy. Boy, he's got a lot of things here. One hell of a lot of things. Look at that. Go with your gut, go with your gut, go with your gut, go with your gut, go with your gut. I'll tell you what I hear an awful lot on his show, this one.
Crack corn and I don't care.
Let's see. I don't see it and I'm giving up. Okay. Boy, this has been a waste of time, Jim.
I'm sorry. I was going to ask Speed to find it for you.
Well, why didn't you? Say, I should mention that we have a gentleman listening right now who is in the hospital. I want to say hello to Nate Meath. Nate, the show tonight dedicated to you. And we're here thinking about you, hoping everything's all right. Maybe I can even get a satellite feed and find out what the devil you're dealing with there at the hospital. A friend of yours called in, Bob, and let us know that that you were in the hospital. Very secretive about what you're dealing with, but we do have a feed on it. All right, very good. There's Nate now. What are they doing to him? Uh-oh.
Do you want a male doctor?
Do you want a male doctor, Nate?
Do you want a male doctor?
Do you want a male doctor, Nate? It's a hemorrhoid. Nate? Uh-oh. He's flatlining. Is that a rubber band or a bicycle tire? What are you... Oh, God. What are you using?
We want a man doctor. We do have a man.
Yeah, we haven't. They can use a man doctor on that, Nate. You might need it. You might need the strength. I'd use a Sawzall on that, baby.
We'll just have you sign out.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, actually, I'm sorry we checked in, but good luck with that, Nate. Nate and me's in the hospital. Our prayers are with you, and Godspeed. Okay. Can we go back to Souchere's array? Or actually, you know what's entertaining to me? Look at all the folks who still have little computer sound effects here. There's Chris Kroc, who I don't believe has worked here all of 2006. Kind of odd. Let's go to Crockster's array and see what Chris had there. Mm-hmm. He used to work here, folks. Oh, yeah. Kroc Talk. There it is. Kroc Talk. There it is. That was Chewbacca. That's what he had on there.
What's up, Doc?
Come hug me. I need a hug. Come hug me. I need a hug.
Well, those days are gone. You know, we're going to miss him because Childress is never going to offer that kind of openness and vulnerability. We're going to miss Mike Tice.
That's it. Let's go.
I'm taking you off here. I'm going away now.